Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures in world entertainment and general pop culture. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
Oh, come. Oh, you can hear its faint echo right now. I'm here to turn up the volume, to press the stinking face of humanity into the dark blood of its own secret heart.
We'll be right back.
Greetings, congregation, ghouls, misfits, miscreants, and all kings of the nighttime world are welcome here. It is I, the maniacal minister of the occult, the devil you know, the truth bringer, forging forward to you with this new American gospel of all things, topics, and entertainment on the Friends. I am the Reverend Dan Wilson here with another edition of the Midnight Black Mass. You just heard the track Be Still and Know by Machine Head off of the 2011 release Unto the Locust, one of my top picks for 2011 albums last year. You can get them on tour right now with Suicide Silence and Darkest Hour. And Atlanta-based listeners, I know we got a lot of freaks down there in the ATL listening to the Midnight Black Mass. You want to catch them next week on February 9th, 2012, live at the Masquerade. On that tour, you can go to MachineHead1, that's the number 1.com, to purchase the new album, Under the Locust, or your tickets for that show. Make sure you give old Machine Head your props, kicking us off with some badass heavy metal. Last week, we had Marvel Comics superstar writer Jason Aaron, a true A-lister in the comic book world. He was on with an amazing interview, incredible insight into the world of comic books for all of us freaks and geeks here that love that sort of thing. He talked about the upcoming Avengers versus X-Men, his run on The Punisher, Incredible Hulk, Wolverine and the X-Men. You just got to go check it out, folks. And Jason was very happy with the interview, and we do hope to have him on again in the future. He said that he would love to join us again, that he enjoyed a wonderful time speaking in the pulpit here on the Midnight Black Mass. On to the professional wrestling news. As always, that's why we're here on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network at gwhnews.com, georgiawrestlinghistory.com down for the moment. But the network still thrives on at blogtalkradio.com/PSP, which is what you're listening to us on now. Maybe it's a forward slash. I don't know. I've had some medicine. I'm feeling good, ready to bring you a true edition of the Midnight Black Mass. NWA Anarchy last Saturday night in Cornelia, Georgia. The Reverend returned after a long absence to the Church of Southern Wrestling, the place that they might as well named it after me. And I came back, and I came back with a little bit of surprise from my old buddy, the Temptation, Sean Tempers, as he had not been treating his former brother, NWA Anarchy Heavyweight Champion Azrael, with the due respect he deserved while I was on my hiatus. And so I had to step in and let the North American champion know that I was still the boss and that the Devil's Rejects were back. After a stipulation many years ago, we lost the match to Tank at Hardcore Hell. That banned us from using that name. That stipulation has expired. So we are back in NWA Anarchy, and for the first time in my career as the Reverend, to a throng of cheers. You know the wrestling world is disenfranchised with the product, folks, when we are the heroes. But you know what? I know why you support us while all these other people are asking the questions. Because we get the job done. You should have been supporting us all along. But now that you're cheering us, we'll take it. If you don't like us, we really don't give a damn, as you've experienced many, many times over throughout the years with the Reverend and the Devil's Rejects. Tomorrow night at Fannin County High School in the Ella J. Blue Ridge area of Georgia, Rev will be returning to NWA Deep Southern Championship Wrestling to manage my Rejects to Hate Junkies in major tag team action there. Always a wild and lively event at Deep Southern Championship Wrestling. And if you're ever in the Rossville, Georgia area, you want to check out Empire Pro Wrestling. I am the Emperor of Empire there. The Reverend is the commissioner, and I make sure that my iron fist rule is enforced. I had a very interesting incident my last time there, and I'm working on some security measures for the next time I show up in there. I started a riot. Well, you know, it happens. On January 21st in Rossville, a couple fans got a little eager and tried to jump the rail, and luckily their security team saved them from what could have been a bludgeoning, as the Staff of Righteousness was broke trying to crack one of their skulls open. But alas, the troublemakers were ejected, and the Rev survived heinous attacks from these crazed people. So as you can see, even though I might be loved in Cornelia, I ain't loved everywhere, not in Rossville, Georgia, that's for sure. Coming up with the Moody Movie Minute here in a moment, and our special guest tonight, whoa, it's a big one, Kevin Helms, a man that played in Hellraiser 3, and part of the movie actually played the role of the iconic, legendary horror icon Pinhead. So he's going to be our special guest tonight, talk about his first ever con appearance in his first ever interview live on the air at the Mad Monster Party coming up in Charlotte, North Carolina, March 23rd through March 25th. Go to themadmonsterparty.com for more details. They got a big lineup coming there. On to the music news. Talk about some album releases. Metallica's new EP, Beyond Magnetic, is scheduled to come out soon. It's supposed to be B-side releases of the Death Magnetic album. So that is going to be quite an interesting experience. If you enjoyed the Death Magnetic album, I think that you probably enjoy the B-sides. That's what they've come to say, is that they the people that have heard them live, they're very similar to the feel of that album. I like the album, especially in comparison to what they had done with Load and Reload and just redefining their sound to something that wasn't what I liked about them. And there was more getting back to that sound. It's still, you got guys with a lot of money, hard to be angry about stuff, I suppose. But, you know, an honorable effort on Metallica's behalf, I thought, with Death Magnetic. And now the B-sides, Beyond Magnetic, coming out in the record store or iTunes, Amazon.com, the great internet stores you can shop at near you. And coming up, some concert dates. The Rev is going to be attending. I'll be in Atlanta, Georgia at Center Stage Theater, the legendary Center Stage Theater, on February 22nd to see Jeff Keith and the Badass Tesla, still rocking to this day. One of the bands that really unfairly got thrown into the hair metal mix. Those guys were well beyond just fluff and glam. You know, and I'm not even a hater of hair metal. I like, it's like the pop music for metalheads. I don't see nothing wrong with it. But at least Tesla, I mean, they were just a badass hard rock band. I mean, you know, playing them Thin Lizzy and Iron Maiden-esque harmonies, that don't just come from being a fluff-ass hair metal band with no talent that was put together by a record label. Tesla's the real deal, and they're still out there kicking ass. I'll be in Atlanta to see them at Center Stage on February 22nd. And Hank 3, friend of the show, former guest, will be in Chattanooga, Tennessee on March the 2nd, Rhythm and Bruise. I'll definitely be in the house to check out the Hellbilly do his thing. Black Sabbath reunion looking to continue now. Big news without Bill Ward. A legendary Black Sabbath drummer posted earlier this week on his Facebook page that he would not be taking part in the reunion. There appears to have been a dispute between him and the other members of the band, and that's happened a couple of times, unfortunately, and prevented what could have been incredible Black Sabbath reunions. Black Sabbath camp of Tony Iommi, Geezer Butler, and Ozzy Osbourne have responded by stating that the door is open to him should they reach an agreement. So let's hope they do, because it ain't going to be a Black Sabbath reunion without Bill Ward blasting them drums like only he can. And, you know, these guys ain't getting any younger. Come on, man. Put it behind you and do it for the fans. As we continue forward, I've been talking about the Metal Evolution show on VH1 Classic that's been airing weekly. Sam Dunn, who made the Heavy the Story of Metal, or Metal A Headbanger's Journey, rather, documentary, has gone and done this hour-long miniseries, 12 parts, I'm told, that's going to highlight each different genre, subgenre of heavy metal. They've done a great job covering all over the spectrum. This past week, shock rock was the topic of the day, and a fantastic, fantastic episode of Metal Evolution. They talked about Kiss, Alice Cooper, King Diamond, Marilyn Manson, just really went over all of the acts that used a factor of shock in selling their tickets. And, you know, some of the argument was made that, well, you know, a lot of these bands were all substance and no punch, and that's where I got to disagree. It was the combination, the music and the shock value in the show and the entertainment value. If they didn't have it in the music side, it wouldn't have succeeded on the other side. People would have seen through it. We're going to bring you a little taste of that right now before we get to the Moody Movie Minute. Going back to the 70s, folks, we're going to take a trip back to 1975. Alice Cooper. Jeff G. Bailey first played this song for me, driving down the highway to an NWA show, and it stuck with me. You know, I did not grow up in the 70s. I was born in the 80s, so I missed this stuff. Wonderful to rediscover. This is off the Welcome to My Nightmare album by Alice Cooper, the two-part Devil's Food and Black Widow. Check it out here on the Midnight Black Mass.
Please don't touch the displays, little boy. Oh, cute. Moving to the next aisle, we have Arachnida, the spiders, our finest collection. This friendly little devil is the Heptathelidae, unfortunately harmless. Next to him, the nasty Lycosa raptoria. His tiny fangs cause creeping ulcerations of the skin. And here, my prize, the Black Widow. Isn't she lovely and so deadly? Her kiss is 15 times as poisonous as that of the rattlesnake. You see, her venom is highly neurotoxic, which is to say that it attacks the central nervous system, causing intense pain, profuse sweating, difficulty in breathing, loss of consciousness, violent convulsions, and finally, death. You know, I think what I love the most about her is her inborn need to dominate, possess. In fact, immediately after the consummation of her marriage to the smaller and weaker male of the species, she kills and eats him. Oh, she is delicious. And I hope he was. Such power and dignity, unhampered by sentiment. If I may put forward a slice of personal philosophy, I feel that man has ruled this world as a stumbling, demented child king long enough. And as his empire crumbles, my precious Black Widow shall rise as his most fitting successor.
These words he speaks are true. We're all human Aries stew. We don't pledge allegiance to the Black Widow. The horror that he'll bring. The horror of his sting. The unholiest of kings. The Black Widow. Every girl and boy will learn to be employed. Widow.
Stanley from Kiss for Red, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Some of us work months producing a CD, but in less time than it takes to play it, someone will be killed in an alcohol-related crash. So please don't drive when you've been drinking. Plan ahead. Arrange a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard, ride a bike, or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
And be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
At letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hello there, I'm Leanne Womack. There's so much that kids have to be good at these days. It's hard to think ahead and realize how something like learning music can help them. Music helps kids because it's a performing art, and performing well is something that children need to learn to take part in society. Getting an 85% on a math test is pretty good, but hitting 85% of the notes in a song during a concert isn't good enough for most music students or their teachers. The kind of practice and preparation that goes into the discipline of performing music helps kids develop habits that will allow them to perform better in all areas of their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
I present to you three of the fiercest subjects ever assembled in the Cage of Doom. First, the brain-wrenching behemoth Algebra 2, weighing in at a mind-boggling 800 pounds. Foreign languages! The multilingual international sensation capable of tossing you clear across the Atlantic. And finally, biology. More ferocious than formaldehyde, she'll dissect you one chromosome at a time. Who among you will step up to their challenge?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Me too.
I'm in.
Sign me up.
Take on the tough classes now.
You need them to prepare for college. Find out which classes you need at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ag Council.
Gonna tell Aunt Mary by another dawn. He claimed he had the music, but he had a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Woo, baby. Have me some fun tonight. Yes. Well, no sauce that she feels sweet.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. The Midnight Black Mass. This is the Reverend bringing you the hottest show on the coast, for all things on the bridge. And ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome our special guest at this time, Mr. Kevin Helms. Are you on the line, sir?
I am, sir. What's going on, Dan?
Hey, it's going very well, and we are very privileged to have you here on the show. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Oh, I'm flattered to be here. It's good to talk to you.
Excellent. And, well, I understand you got a big date coming up, a couple of dates, March 23rd through the 25th, Charlotte, North Carolina, the Mad Monster Party. This is your first ever convention appearance, am I right?
It is. It is my first. This is my first to do anything associated with Pinhead. So it's good to get this going.
That's outstanding. And from what Robert Everett, who was kind enough, a great associate of the show, to hook you up with us here, indicates this is also one of your first radio interviews ever?
Actually, it is, yeah. So you're getting my cherry cracked on a couple of levels.
Outstanding. Well, there you have it, folks. History being made on the Midnight Black Mass. Well, Kevin, I don't know how much time you have, but I'm going to ask a few questions, and we can just move right through it at your pace. But first thing I'd like to ask is, how did this whole thing come about? As we've spoken to our fans, that you did play Pinhead in a portion of Hellraiser 3. Where did this all come from?
Well, I had worked in the background in commercials and stuff for probably about a year or two. I did my first PA gig in 89. I got out of school in 91. At the time I was dating somebody, and she lived up near Winston-Salem. And she was modeling. She was with an agency in Greensboro. And I have an art degree, and I had a background in photography and such. So I started working at the agency. I was doing photography work, darkroom work, and also kind of trying to get into the talent side of the agency. And the movie came to town, and they came to our agency looking for people to come do, you know, extra work, what have you. She ended up going, she was a model at the agency. She ended up going and getting the stand-in gig. She was Terry Farrell's stand-in, and then they said, you know, Kevin, you should go over there and try to get the stand-in, the male stand-in, which has been, you know, being Doug Bradley's stand-in. So I went, I met the AD and the director and stuff, and it worked out, so I ended up getting a stand-in gig. So I was kind of there. And after several weeks on the set, I don't know, they should have known this beforehand. I thought it was funny, but they realized it was like, okay, there's a scene where Doug, you know, Doug Bradley, needed to be in this, you know, Pinhead needed to be in the same scene with Elliot Spencer. And they realized, you know, he couldn't be two places at once. So they came to me and looked at me and thought, you know, this guy can do it. And I ended up being able to do it.
That's outstanding. Now, were you a fan of the horror genre prior to that? So did that add to the experience, if so?
No, it was a great thing. I do love horror movies. I mean, I was a big fan of the more, not so much Hellraiser. I mean, Hellraiser was good. I loved Hellraiser 2. 1 and 2 are both good. 2, I saw an unrated version of 2, and it blew my mind. It was fantastic. Yeah, I always, you know, like The Shining, things like that. But I knew about Hellraiser, and just being on the set, it was a cool set. We shot mainly in High Point, a little soundstage there. We shot a good bit in Greensboro, and actually shot one day in Charlotte, which is where I live now. But It was just a phenomenal. It was my first time being on a full movie set. I'd done like I said, smaller stuff, PA stuff, commercials and whatnot. But it was my first movie gig, and looking back on it, I mean, it was a great time.
That sounds outstanding. Like it absolutely was a dream come true for a horror fan. Even though, as you said, you tend to lean towards more psychological-based horror than the in-your-face stuff like the Hellraiser, but that's still outstanding. I'm told that you have a very interesting recounting of what it was like to become this powerful and dark character in Pinhead, and that there was actually a possession of sorts. Am I right?
What I do remember, When I think back on it, there are a few things I do remember. I remember my first meeting, actually, first time I ever seeing Doug on the set. If anybody's ever been on the set, they'll know that it's for stand-ins and some actors and extras and stuff. It's hurry up and wait. So you spend a lot of time at the craft service table, you know, eating and all. So there was one day I'd been drinking tea and stuff all day. So I ended up, of course, going to the bathroom. I'm standing there doing my business. And I hear the door swing open, and I'm standing there, I just kind of, the corner of my eye, kind of look, to see what's going on, and standing there next to me is Doug, and he's got on these old gray sweatpants, a purple sweatshirt with the sleeves cut out, and he's got the pinhead, the head appliance on, nails, the whole bit, and he's got these clear, flock of seagull, prescription sunglasses, glasses, and he has a cigarette in an extension like the ladies in the 30s, like Greta Garbo would smoke out of, because he didn't want to get the cigarette, because they do your mouth and everything. And he's just standing there, and I realized, okay, I'm staring at this guy, and all of a sudden he just kind of looks at me, and he notices me, and he reaches up, and he pulls a cigarette out of his mouth, and I apologize for my bad English accent, but he goes, "Hello." I just realized I'm just standing there, I hear I'm in the bathroom with Pinhead, and I just thought it's just a funny initial, being able to, to be initiated to this guy like this. But he, when they decided for me to do this, I came in, the first one had to be like 6 in the morning. I got in the chair, the makeup chair, probably 7 o'clock. I was in the chair from 7. They worked with me constantly from 7 until I think it was about almost 2 o'clock, between 1:30 and 2 o'clock. So it was about 7 hours, and it's a full deal. You start with like a bodysuit, and the costume itself is amazing. I mean, it's leather and wool. It's like the tightest, nicest motorcycle jacket you've ever had on. It's like, but it's on you backwards, like almost like a corset or a straight jacket. I mean, it's intense. And but when you're done with it, the only part of yourself that's not been augmented in some way is the white of your eyes and the inside of your mouth. And it's strange when you've got it on, you cease to exist. Really, you become. It is a total. 100%. It is a costume. We've all gone to Halloween. We've all, put on the hobo costume or whatever. Putting on the pinhead costume, if you want to call it that, it's a complete psychological. It's a transformation. It really is. You kind of stop being yourself, and you look in the mirror and you go, "Oh shit, that's me." And it's a strange thing. It really was. And I always remember, I'm talking about it now. I'm getting goosebumps. But it was a. You look in the mirror, you just go, wow. And you get it. You understand. And it's like you kind of feel like that. You want to say the things he does. It's like it really was. That was the most special part about it, I think, was just feeling it.
So I can sympathize with that. And actually, if you go back to some things, people like Jack Nicholson have said, is actually an old wives' tale in Hollywood, that Nicholson warned Heath Ledger about picking up the role of the Joker, because once you became such an intense and heinous character, and you had to put all of yourself into making that believable, that you kind of carry a piece of that with you, and it's a little bit dark for some folks to be able to take.
I can't imagine doing it for an extended period of time, but it really was. And I just want to say something about Doug. He was always very cool with me, and honestly, he didn't have to be nice to me, but he was. Very smart guy. You could tell he had that theater voice, just carried a great presence about him. I do remember, it's funny, the first time that I ever got into the makeup, the trailer was right beside the soundstage. So they did me up, and like I said, the only part of your body that is not changed in some way is your eyes and your mouth. So you're sort of, it's almost claustrophobic, really. I mean, it's such an intensive change. But I walked in, as I'm walking in, the craft service table's right there. I'm walking in, people are hanging out, and I can remember people going, "Oh, hey Doug, how you doing? Hey Doug," and they didn't even get it. So I walked in, and the script supervisor, she walked by, she goes, "Hey Doug," and she just kind of, it's like somebody had shot her. She goes, "Oh shit, that's not Doug. Kevin?" And I was like, "Hey, how you doing, Hillary?"
Yeah, you think you maybe could have fooled someone into just going in and doing a take. You just pulled a good rib on the executive there.
Everybody else knew at some point, yeah, that wouldn't have gone through. But no, I just remember Hillary, she was like, "Kevin?" I was like, "Hey, how you doing?" You know, and people are standing there talking to me and, you know, like going, "Wow, you know, it looks good and everything." And then as they're talking to me, I can see they're kind of gaze looking behind me, and I heard one person go, "Here he comes." And, of course, it was Doug. He was coming on the set. So I turn around, and there's Doug standing there. You know, he's got on, like, an Izod and some jeans. And, you know, he's ubiquitous. He always had tea in his hand because, I mean, a lot of the crew was English, so he had his tea. And he was just standing there looking at me, and he was probably about 20 feet away, and he walked up. He got about 5 feet away, and he just stopped, and he leaned in, and he got a little bit closer. And once again, I apologize for my English accent, but he goes, "My God, you're me." He was just looking at me just like, yeah, I guess it was for him. It had to have been weird because, Pinhead was his baby. He had been given to him by Clive. They were friends in England, you know, to my understanding. And but it was just, he really was just kind of giving me that look, you know, kind of like I would imagine like a, somebody's been living in the woods for years. The first time I saw an airplane or something, you know, he was just looking at me like, "Holy shit." Because I was the first person. I don't know if anybody else has ever done it, but at that point, I was the first person that had ever been in that except him. But from then on, it was always, he was always, you know, when we were shooting, he was very helpful. He'd be like, "Okay, in this scene, this is what Pinhead would do." You know, and he would give me cues on like intensity and pin him to do this and that. And he would talk about, you know, pin him like he was a real person. And it was very helpful. And like I said, very intense guy, very smart guy. I would love to have done it more. I kind of knew at the time, I'm like, I'm not going to do this again. Cause you could just tell, cause that was, I don't know that he was very happy about me doing this, and I don't blame him a bit, and so I was just flattered to do it, and I ended up being in the full makeup 2 days, and then there was a third day. They did some special effects stuff, and I basically did, like, you know, shoulders up, but for 2 days I got to walk around, and it's that costume is intense. It's really, I mean, it's laced onto your back. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. And for anybody that wonders, the pins, there's actually, I guess it's sort of a like a trivia question, there's 142 nails. And I remember at the time, they had 144 and they had two extra, but there's 142 in the head.
And if I can ask, how did they apply the nails? Because that's all, I mean, I'm guessing it's just some sort of adhesive material, but it looks very convincing.
Well, what they told me, and Bob Keane was the head makeup guy, and Paul was the one who did my makeup mostly. the original Pinhead, the appliance was five pieces, and it was a pain in the ass to put together. And by the time they got into three, it was basically two pieces. It was the face was one piece, and then the rest of the head was a second. Of course, spirit gum and all. But they're like back in the day, we used to call them sex nuts. You push up; it's two pieces. The nails get pushed up from the inside. They put the product, you know, the appliance on, and then they cap them. They're handmade brass. So basically, they shove and, you know, they push the one piece up through the inside, put the piece on you, and then cap with the nail all the way around. I guess it's okay to say that. I mean, I don't think it's a big secret, but yeah. But there was 142 nails, and they had two extra, so they made a gross at 144 and 142. So we're like, Kevin, don't lose one. You know, we've only got two. So.
That's outstanding. A lot of horror fans I know are curious about things like that, and that's the audience that we cater to here. So. Again, we greatly appreciate you taking your time, Kevin, to give us these stories and anecdotes of such an amazing experience. Now, when it was all over, when it was all said and done, you moved on, and did you do anything else in film, or did you go up into other avenues? Kind of where did your career take you after Hellraiser?
After Hellraiser, it's funny, I really didn't do any more acting. I worked for years. You know, like I said, once again, I live in Charlotte. I worked. We have an IOTC local here that does, you know, film work, theater work, and I worked with them for years. That's actually where I met Robbie. I have a degree as an art, as a painter. I'm a painter. And actually, this weekend in Charlotte, I have a show tomorrow night. If anybody's in Charlotte or around, there's a Noda section. Of Charlotte is a new brewery that just came up called Birdsong, and I'm having a show with some of my paintings tomorrow night from 7 to 10. And also I have a Facebook page of my art. It's not a very clever name. It's just Kevin Helms Artist. I teach. I'm a college professor. I teach part-time at a couple different schools, digital media. Things like that, Final Cut Pro editing, things like that. So, kind of pieced together, cobbled together, existence.
So that's fascinating, though, because you always wonder, you know, and certainly being in the entertainment field myself, I know how it goes. You're always looking for that next gig, and you're always trying to figure out, you know, what you're going to do to move forward. And a lot of folks go into the more behind the scenes area of things, and make out a perfectly good living. And there's, you know, a lot of creative people there, and probably more so than should be because of the way the economy and jobs are. But still, that's absolutely fascinating. And there you have it, fans. We do have a lot of fans in the Charlotte, North Carolina area. We've had several folks from your neck of the woods on, Gideon Smith, Robert himself, had our own Henson on. So we've got a lot of fan base there. You'll need to go out and check out Kevin's art show and his Facebook page, as you said, at Kevin Helms Art. Now, I know you talked about doing art and being a college professor. We like to get in the heads of our guests a little bit here on the show. And since this show is about media and sharing good things, valuable entertainment, we like to ask what our guests are into. Musically, what type of things are you listening to musically? You got any great TV shows or movies that you've seen that you'd just like to talk about?
Musically, I listen to pretty much everything. I'm not a rap person at all. Back in the day, oh God, yeah, I don't get it. But I mean, I listen to it's changed a lot over the years. I remember back in the day, I used to love. I listened to Skinny Puppy a good bit. And that, you know, that type. And I know that at the Mad Monster Party, I know Nivek, the Skinny Puppy's former lead singer, is going to be there. I'm thrilled to be able to get a chance to meet him. I listen to a lot of podcasts. There's a podcast of England called Radio 360, and some other stuff like that. I just listen to a bunch of different stuff. There's nothing I really stick to. I do love old sci-fi. I love Blade Runner, beautiful movie. Chance to meet Rucker Hauer, who's also going to be at Mad Monster. That's going to be a thrill. Of course, I love all the old Star Wars. I'm an old guy, so I, you know, I was there. I went the second week that movie came out, but I love. I forgot. But music is just across the board. Just don't play rap. And new country wears me out. I love old country.
Yeah, I do too. We've actually had Hank 3 on the show and had a very extensive discussion about that. That new country music is terrible, but that old stuff was really fantastic. And there's guys like him out there still trying to beat that style into people's heads that you know, doesn't get a lot of play. But I'd agree. You know, going back to Skinny Puppy and some of those goth bands, I'd actually been asked by Robert to bring this up just as a topic of conversation. I agree. I talk about Skinny Puppy, bands like Kraftwerk, Gary Numan, Switchblade Symphony.
Gary Numan was the first album that I ever bought. I bought Gary Numan Telecon when I was in junior high school. So that's it's funny. All my friends had older brothers that listened to like old rock, like Nazareth and all that stuff, and I didn't get it. And then the first time I heard Gary Numan, I'm like, oh my God, that's it. So I went. We used to have a storage Charlotte called Record Bar, and I went and I bought Gary Numan Telecon. So that's kind of where my head started.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned those bands, because you can take that style, that sleek synthesizer, icy cool sound, and you can take the fashion and the wardrobe there, and you have to look at maybe what an undeniable influence that Pinhead was on the gothic S&M subculture. The wardrobe trendsetting he had, obviously, but he derived pleasure through pain as a true and classic masochist figure. And he sort of developed a brand new kind of horror that was sleek leather and sexy, a true innovation for our ever-changing times.
It really was. And in Hellraiser 2, it's hard to find now, but Hellraiser 2, there used to be an uncut version. It's when Dr. Schnarr brings the patient into the room. He's imagining that he has, I think he's imagining that he has maggots crawling him, and he hands him a straight razor because he wants him to cut himself and bleed. And he actually, in the uncut version, it shows this guy slicing himself up. And it's one of the most intense things that I've ever seen. And I've actually tried to find this version of it. And it's really hard to find. So if anybody can find that uncut, it's one of those, you cover one eye and look at the other one, it's like, oh my God. And just the sound effects and everything, it's very intense.
That's incredible. Well, as we're wrapping up here, this has just been a fantastic look into your life, Kevin, and you always, we love to bring interesting people to the show, to our masses here in the congregation of the Midnight Black Mass itself. And you've definitely filled that role, and we greatly appreciate it. As I've mentioned, folks, Mad Monster Party coming up March 23rd to 25th. You can go to themadmonsterparty.com to order tickets. You were mentioning some of the guests earlier, but we're talking about Bill Moseley is going to be there, legendary horror actor.
Absolutely. David Prowse. I've met
freely.
David Prowse once before.
Go ahead, dude, with the David Prowse story. I was just popping like a fanboy over Ace Frehley being there. But, yeah.
Ace Frehley, sure. PJ from Rock and Roll High School, she's going to be there. But, David Prowse will be there. I met him years ago. I worked briefly for a Comic-Con in San Diego, and I got a chance to meet him. It's been a long time, but it's, for me, it's just to be back and see all these people. I think I'm probably going to walk in and my jaw is going to be needing to be picked up off the floor. I believe I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be, for me, it will be a special time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually going to do everything I can to make it out there that weekend. Rev's got a lot of things going on with my various wrestling commitments and what have you. But it's funny that you mentioned you met David Prowse at Comic-Con, because I actually met him at Dragon Con, where I do the wrestling events annually down there. So that's a pretty weird symmetry. But in any event, now, with this being your first convention appearance that we've mentioned, I just got to ask, what brings you to the public eye after so long? Kind of what are you expecting beyond having your jaw hit the floor?
I'm really not sure. A lot of this is totally due to Robbie. I've been friends with Robbie for a long time. And he always, you know, when I told him that I'd done this, he had an interest in it. Most people don't care, which I think, I was talking to Robbie tonight, I thought it was funny. A few people, when I'd tell them, you know, I never made a big deal out of it, but I would tell people, and they kind of, most people would be like, oh, that's great. Anyway, but, you know, every once in a while you would tell someone, they go, oh, my God, you know, and Robbie was one of those, and he dug it. And he actually contacted me about this, and he said, you know, is this something you would think about doing? And it hit me. I was like, wow, this could be a lot of fun. And I've really, I mean, we've been kind of working on this a little bit for a couple months now, and I'm really enjoying it. And I, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I don't know what to expect, but I'm definitely looking forward. I mean, I will be there as, you know, I'll have a table. I'm there, but I'll also be there as a fan. So I'm gonna be able to get a little bit of both.
Yeah, and that's always the great part about those things, you know. And if it's anything like any of the other cons I've been to, it's just going to be a big fucking party after it's all said and done. So,
there you go.
Everybody is going to be having a good time down at the Mad Monster Party this side.
Well, if you make it, you got to come by and say hey.
I absolutely will, man. We'll have a beer or whatever you're into.
Got it.
Well, Kevin, it again has been an absolute honor and a privilege to have you on the show. We would love to have you back in the future to talk about how the Mad Monster Party went and maybe any future cons that might come of that.
You got it, man. I've enjoyed it, and I thank you very much for having me on.
Hey, thank you very much, Kevin. Have a good one. Rock it out.
You too. Thank you.
All right, see ya. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Kevin Helms, who was the stand-in for the legendary Doug Bradley on Hellraiser 3. Wow, what we bring you an insight into an iconic horror film right here on the Midnight Black Mass. And Kevin was a very, very gracious guest. Really enjoyed having him on. But the show's not over. I may be going to still have a Moody Movie Minute if he'll get his ass up out of the bed. I know he passed out. I know exactly. He drank too many beers. He passed out in front of that big-ass TV of his. I know exactly how it works, Mookie. You ain't fooling nobody. But we still have TV casts. We still have Seance of the Damned. We still have so much more to get to. We're going to get to some tunes right now. Heard a little taste of this. This was Hellraiser by Motorhead. We're going to play the song in its entirety for you. It was released, actually a co-written song, by Ozzy Osbourne, Zakk Wylde, and Lemmy Kilmister. It was written for Ozzy for the 1991 No More Tears album. Then Lemmy actually took and recorded his own version of it for the Hellraiser 3 soundtrack. And this is the version that we'll be playing for you tonight. The classic tune Hellraiser by Motorhead. And we're back on the Midnight Black Mass. And you just heard Motorhead's version of Hellraiser in honor of our special guest tonight, Mr. Kevin Helms, who played Pinhead in part of Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth. Just joined us for a fascinating interview and look inside the production of that horror classic. But after that, you heard Judas Priest with the classic off of the 1978 phenomenal, all-time great Judas Priest album, Stained Class. That was Better By You, Better Than Me. Very infamous tune in the right that it, quote-unquote, caused the attempted suicide, the slash suicide of James Vance and Raymond Belknap back in 1985. The Judas Priest suicide song, as it's known, those four guys went through hell and back to prove their innocence there. There was alleged backward masking on that song that was telling these kids, just a bunch of sad parents with stupid kids who regretted what they did, and they, of course, needed a scapegoat, and Judas Priest was the scapegoat, but the band overcomed, and they're still out there kicking ass to this very day. So don't always believe what you read, folks. The Rev doing my part to promote social Darwinism here on the Midnight Black Mass. Right now, I'm going to move on into the realm of the printed visual medium, into the realm of comic books. So the truest of true geeks will stay with us, just like the Rev is deep down, that's for sure. Into DC Comics. DC has announced this past week that they are going forward with previously rumored plans of a Watchmen prequel set. This series of comics is going to be entitled Before Watchmen. It will take a look at the prior lives of Dr. Manhattan, Rorschach, Ozymandias, and all of the various former Charlton Comics-inspired characters that Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons brought to popularity in the 1980s. And, of course, met with great fanboy outrage. A lot of people tend to hold Watchmen in this high regard that it's something beyond a comic book. And now I have no problem with that. You can think what you want about it. I thought it was an extremely well-done comic book, but it was still a comic book, so I just don't understand. Why do you want a medium to accept you that is never going to accept you? Comic books are never going to be respected as true literary works in the mainstream. This is the way it is. And there's no sense in trying to change that, because there is a group of people both that are supporting the industry today and that will support it in the future that love and support comic books, and that's the audience that you need to reach. And not worry about the high literary, the upper class folks that will look down their nose at you for being some high form of art. It is what it is, so to speak. But I don't understand the fanboy outrage, but I expected it. They don't want Watchmen touched. And my advice to you, if your panties are in a bunch, is to pull the tampon out and ignore it. It's not going to change the book you love. It's not going to take anything away from the legendary book that is Watchmen, a story from beginning to end. But for fans that might want to check out a little extra, that might want just a little more insight into these folks, I don't think it's a terrible idea. And DC's bringing out the heavy hitters for this. They've got all-star writers like Brian Azzarello, known for The Joker and Lex Luthor and Noel graphic novels. And the 100 Bullets series. He's now the writer on Wonder Woman. He's one of DC's A-listers. Darwin Cook, who wrote Justice League, The New Frontier, need I say any more? J. Michael Straczynski, legendary comic book figure. Lynn Wine, legendary comic book figure. Artists are Lieber Mayho, Andy and Joe Kubert, Adam Hughes, Amanda Connor, and more. So DC Comics is definitely bringing out the heavy hitters for this Watchmen prequel. And I, for one, am interested in it. I'm going to add those to my pull list and see what all the fuss is about. And maybe I'll hate them. And if I do, then it'll be the money I spent that I regret, and that's it. Speaking of DC Comics, the new 52 has had a recent writer shakeup. we now learned that Jeff Lemire, who has rose to popularity writing Animal Man, one of the sleeper hits of the new 52. Man, I'm loving the Animal Man. Got my number one first print edition in the mail today. Collecting that one. It's on the pull list all the way, getting ready to pick up number 6 at the comic book store next week. So he will be leaving Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, and he will be going to Justice League Dark. Peter Milligan will leave Justice League Dark to write Stormwatch, and Matt Kynes will take over Frankenstein, Agent of Shade. So a little bit of shakeup. They've already announced some cancellations. I know Static Shock was in that line. They're also bringing in some new titles to replace those that they canceled on the new 52, one of them being kind of called World's Finest, that will feature Power Girl and the Huntress from Earth 2 stuck on Earth 1 trying to get back to Earth 2. That should be interesting. Creative team shakeups, a lot of reasons they could do it. Main reason cited is probably sales, and I'm certainly excited that Jeff Lemire will be writing Justice League Dark because, as I said, he's fantastic on Animal Man, and I'm also subscribing to Justice League Dark. That is the more supernatural-powered heroes of the DC Universe banding together to take on magical, evil, supernatural forces. So far, the team's been Deadman, John Constantine, Zatanna, Madame Xanadu, Shade. It's been a nice little group of freaks, and they've been taking on an evil witch in this first arc. So I'm very interested to see where Jeff Lemire takes this. Happy 20th birthday to Image Comics, the company, the independent comic company now, that spawned, no pun intended, one of the most popular and successful comics of the 1990s, and all the various Gen 13, Wetworks, etc. that came out at that time. Stormwatch was a big one also. Net-to-Now, producing comics like Invincible and The Walking Dead, and Savage Dragon, which is still going. All very popular comics. This was all done independently. A major writer shakeup when a team of individuals left the big companies in Marvel and DC. February 1st, 1992, Eric Larson, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Todd McFarlane, Will Sportacio, Mark Silvestri, and Jim Palantino all left the major companies as a means for popular creators to produce and publish their own original work while retaining full ownership of their intellectual property. News coming in that Matthew Vaughn will be returning to direct the X-Men First Class sequel that will be coming up here in the next year or so, and that's good news because I absolutely loved X-Men First Class. Now they've established Magneto as a villain, and one of the most fascinating portrayals of him I've ever seen, Michael Fassbender, and really now we'll get the chance to sink his teeth into the role in the sequel, so I'm really looking forward to that. Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance debuts in theaters in the next couple of weeks. Universally panned was the first Ghost Rider amongst everyone that I've ever met. It was, by all accounts, a pretty terrible movie, and I wanted to like it. I even have an appreciation for the Nicolas Cage brand of cheese that he brings to action films, and I tend to think it has a good time feeling appeal myself, but a lot of people don't. But regardless, the fan reviews coming in on this Ghost Rider that have seen advanced copies tend to state that it's quite a bit beyond the first one. CGI has greatly improved since that first film came out. So I'm going to give Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance a chance. I don't think old Johnny Blaze is sunk just yet when it comes to the realm of the theatrical. And the final piece of comic book news is Batman Night of the Owls has been announced to be DC Comics' first major new 52 crossover event. You've been following any of the Batman titles, Batman Detective Comics or Batman the Dark Knight, you've learned in Gotham City that there is an Illuminati-like force lurking in the shadows, pulling the strings of everything that happens, ensuring the outcomes to their favor of every major event. They even control the crime in Gotham City, and Batman is uncovering their sinister plot, and as that thickens, we're going to be right into the thick of Night of the Owls, and I think the new 52 has been fantastic. It's been a way for them to reintroduce these characters to people who may have fallen off trying to keep up with all the continuity. When you have that many years of continuity, you have to restart over from time to time, and I think they've done that. A great job on all the titles. Justice League has been phenomenal showing how all of these heroes made up. Aquaman is on my pull list. Also, that Geoff Johns has reinvigorated that character like no other. I've said it before on this show, and I'll say it again. I absolutely thought Aquaman was of the lamest superheroes to ever draw a breath. And I know he's had some great runs and some good writers, but I just could not overcome the stigma of him simply being Aquaman. And so what we now find in this new Geoff Johns reboot of the DC 52 is he acknowledges that. He acknowledges that he doesn't get any respect. And he's fighting adversity because of it, and it really endears you to the character. So you better put Aquaman on your pull list or you're really missing out. The Flash has also been phenomenal by DC New 52. Green Lantern's been great. Suicide Squad has been great. Harley Quinn has been tearing it up there. My pull list has grown as well on the Marvel side of things. I've added the new Winter Soldier individual series that started at number one this week. I love the Bucky Barnes as the Soviet assassin Winter Soldier character, and I do believe this is going to be a fantastic story of high-level espionage in the Marvel Universe. I'm really looking forward to that. And also added Deadpool to the pool list. That was actually at the behest of Mrs. Reverend. She's now in crossed over into the dark side of full-on geekdom. She started as a Harry Potter geek, and now she's crossed over into the comic book geekdom, and she's added Deadpool to her pool list because he entertains her. So there you go. There's your comic book news for the week. We're going to move right along with the show tonight. Got a little more music for you coming up. But right now, it is time. You heard the Misfits say it, so I don't have to, but I'm going to say it again anyway. It is time for another edition of TV Casualty here on the Midnight Black Mass. This is our expansive look at the DC Animated Universe since we were doing comic news. Perfect segue into the TV Casualty. Of course, we're still in the early goings of this thing, and we got a lot ahead of us. Right now, we just started with Batman the Animated Series. We're on the 8th episode. The title of this week's edition is called The Forgotten. This originally aired on October 8th of 1992. This is a story of Batman that you really don't see bats until the very end of the episode. It's more about Bruce Wayne in terms of the homeless of Gotham City are going missing. And we've got to get to the bottom of it. Well, who better than the world's greatest detective as we move forward with another edition of TV Casualty. On this episode, Bruce Wayne is helping out a local mission in Gotham City, feeding the homeless. He's used his massive funds to bring these poor and unfortunate men lots of food, and he's serving them himself to show that, you know, he really is a man of the people, is Bruce Wayne. And one of the men working there just happens to tell him that a lot of the homeless folks have indeed been vanishing. That regulars that had come in there to the soup kitchen, they just not heard from them in weeks, and no one knows where they're going. So Bruce decides, of course, that he's going to look into this and give justice to a voice that maybe if you would give one to in the homeless. So he returns back to the Batcave. He decides he's going to get all made up in his Sunday best, quote-unquote, if he was a train-hopping hobo. Puts him on a nice 5 o'clock shadow, dyes the hair gray, get some torn and tattered clothing, and he drives off into the slums of Gotham City to investigate as only the world's finest detective can do. While walking around, Bruce is jumped by two men during his investigation. Of course, he's Bruce Wayne. He's a badass. He's a fucking living ninja, so he dispatches easily of these two goons. But then some punk hits him in the head from behind with a baseball bat, and Bruce is knocked out cuckoo and cold when he awakes. He's chained to a bed in a house out in the desert. He's greeted by two men. A man named Dan Riley, a little short fella, nerdy-looking guy with glasses, and Salvo Smith, a very in-shape, large black fella with a shaved head and a very calm demeanor. When the duo asks Bruce his name, he can't remember. His identity has been forgotten. Uh-oh, amnesia in a Batman episode. Let's just say this probably won't be the last time this happens. Only in the 8th episode, and I can't promise you this isn't the first time it's happened, but I believe so. Anyway, flash forward to Wayne Manor. Alfred brings some food for Bruce into his room, only to find that his master is gone. Meanwhile, it is revealed to Bruce that he is indeed held hostage at a slave camp, and it's ran by a fat fuck barrel boy named Boss Biggus, a very harsh and uncaring individual, to put it mildly. To prevent any laziness amongst his workers, Boss Biggus orders one of the men to be thrown into the box. And it's a little small container, solitary confinement type deal. Generates extreme heat under the sun and normally kills whoever's inside it. Of course, afterwards, Bruce, Riley, and Smith go to work in the mine to find gold ore. The cave eventually begins to collapse above them, but the three are able to survive unharmed. Late that night, Bruce has a dream where he's looking in the mirror at himself dressed in a fancy suit, and he's laughing uncontrollably. Suddenly, the figure changes into the clown prince of crime, the ace of knaves, the Joker, and it grabs Bruce as they fall towards the street from a tall, tall building. The dream quickly flashes to Bruce standing on the street outside of the mission, handing out money to homeless people, and after awakening in a cold sweat, Bruce and the others head outside to another day's work. After Smith makes a wisecrack towards Boss Biggus, he is ordered into the box. Bruce and Riley fight off a number of the henchmen until they are overwhelmed trying to save their friend. Bruce and Riley are then locked in the containers as well for punishment for their deeds. Alfred's starting to get a little bit concerned now. Bruce hasn't been here. Alfred really doesn't know what to do with himself when he's not taking care of Bruce Wayne. So he heads down to the Batcave and happens to find one of the cars missing. He uses the back computer to initiate the tracking device, little GPS, before its time there in 1992. Following the signal to the wreckage yard, Alfred spots two men loading something into a van. He sneaks under the van and places a tracking device from the car onto it so he can follow him. Back at the camp, Riley tells Bruce about his family and how he might never see them again. This causes Bruce to have a vision of his own, of his parents playing with him as a child in a happier time. But it quickly flashes to an image of their gravestones, and then the Batman standing high above the city. Bruce has finally regained his consciousness. He finally has remembered who he is. So Bruce, kicking out the side of the container, he escapes into a canyon as Boss Biggus and his men give chase. Bruce rock climbs up the side of the mountain and is able to get away. Just then, Alfred flies overhead inside of the Batplane. He was able to track down Bruce, and once landing, Bruce thanks Alfred and then puts on the bat suit. He heads back to the camp to stomp Biggus and the others into the dusk. Facing a storm of gunfire, Bruce retreats into the mining cavern. Once inside, he dispatches two of the punks quickly. This causes Boss Biggus to panic and shut off all the lights, hoping to hide him and his men. Well, obviously, fat ass, you know that's not going to fucking work because he is the goddamn Batman. He's lurking in the shadows waiting for your ass. Of course, he knocks out the rest of the henchmen. Biggus falls back away in fright, begging like a cur, dropping the torch he was carrying in a pen full of explosives. Always these guys, always, especially the low-level goons, always damn near killing everybody. Batman knocks himself and Biggus into a river below just as the cave explodes in a giant ball of flames. With the slave camp finished, Bruce stands outside of the mission with Riley and Smith, revealing his true identity to his newfound friends. Bruce offers the men jobs with Wayne Corp if they need one, so they can return to more normal lives and not be homeless and get off the streets. And ladies and gentlemen, another edition of TV Casualty has concluded as we follow the adventures of the DC Animated Universe. Right now we're on Batman the Animated Series with the Caped Crusader, and it is, as I say every week, one of the finest adaptations of comic to television to film to any medium ever. Next week, the episode will feature the return of Batman's arch nemesis, the most famous comic book villain of all time, the Ace of Knaves, the Joker, in an episode called Be a Clown. And we'll see you back here next week for more TV Casualty. But the show is far from over, fans. we do still have a Seance of the Damned. We do still have more great tunes. We're getting some of those right now. Going to bring you a tune off the new Mastodon album, The Hunter, late in 2011. That was released, another one of my picks for album of the year. And this is the single off of that album, the hit single, called Curl of the Burl. Head on over to MastodonRocks.com and purchase your copy of this album today.
White noise in the airwaves and appear
You're on the seance of the damned. Okay, looks like we might begin a little activity here. Not 100% sure, but do have a little bit of a green light. Looks like we are, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a spirit on the air for the seance of the damned. Who am I talking to right now?
Greetings and salutations. It's Coach Joe Paterno.
Whoa, Joe Paterno, are you kidding me? Legendary Penn State football coach. What brings you to such a wretched hive of scum and villainy such as the Midnight Black Mass?
Well, through Michael Jackson, I heard this place was a great place where the recently departed can air their grievances. And I have a grievance that needs to be aired.
Well, by all means, sir. I'm certainly not known as a football fan here. I'll be quite honest. I have nothing against it. It just don't pickle my pickle, so to speak. But even I, a non-fan, can respect a man with a legacy and a reputation such as yourself. So what grievance did you have to air with us tonight, sir?
I'm going to keep this short and sweet. For the U.S. media, you can suck a whole bag of dicks. And no, before you twist my words, not children's dicks, full-grown ones. And you know, I followed the required protocol. I certainly weren't trying to cover up no kid touching. I always knew that fat fuck Sandusky was a turd, and he fucking ruined me. And look what happened. Prophecy fulfilled. That's all. Anyway, that's all I had to say. I'm not going to belabor the point. I'm not going to go overboard. I just needed to get that out. I've said my piece. I'm at peace. I no longer have to endure the false outrage of uninformed morons. Good night.
What? Wow. Just wow. Not sure how to even comment on that one. I'm just going to leave it alone. But again, proof positive, you never know who's going to show up on the Midnight Black Mass. Wait a minute. Now, do we actually have another guest coming through here? I was only planning on the one. I only called out requesting one, but the portals, you never know. Let's hope we didn't get another Ertu the Warbringer. Who do we have on the air? This is Don Cornelius. Don Cornelius. Really, so the Soul Train finally came crashing down and crashed and burned off the rails, all that good shit, huh? Don't worry about old Donnie. I don't fight the funk, son. I'm getting me some fine-ass brown sugar right here. Well, Don, amazing what death does to your voice. You sound like a white southern man, perhaps one from, I don't know, Stone Mountain, Georgia. That's preposterous. Need to lighten up, man. Need to get down and boogie and get on the soul train. You see, you slither on the dance floor. You feel the funk. You slap that brown sugar on the hind end. And you get on the snake train. Don't trust it. God damn it, Jake. God damn it. Okay, you know, I had changed my frequencies. I went out and bought a new Ouija board just to avoid the prank calls from this alleged person who once was claiming to be Jake the Snake Roberts. Now apparently he's claiming to be Don Cornelius from Soul Train. He also told me he was the British Bulldog one week. So, you know, we always got pranksters here. Great. Now I have to go buy another Ouija board. So now while I'm cooling off from that little interruption of the seance of the damn, I guess it's time to wrap up this show. But what a fantastic evening. I'm not even going to let Jake get me down. It was a fantastic show. Kevin Helms, who played Pinhead in part of Hellraiser 3, brought us magnificent insight into that horror classic. We had another edition of TV Casualty. We brought you news, we brought you tunes, and we're going to leave you with one final tune. And this man I'm actually going to be seeing in concert once more for the sixth time. Hank Williams III, a former guest here on the show. I'll be seeing him in Chattanooga, Tennessee on March the 2nd at Rhythm of Bruise. If you're in the area in the scenic city, you need to come on out and party with us. Only How the Hellbillies Do It. This song is off of the classic 2006 album, a seminal album for Hank III, the album that really broke him to the mainstream, the masses, the idiots that didn't know he was out there, and there's still plenty of idiots that don't know he's out there. But guess what? Tune into the internet. It's the modern age, fool. you like country music, why the hell are you listening to this garbage on the radio? The Rev doesn't come across as a man that would like country music. But when art is poured from the soul, you cannot deny it. And the old-time crooners like Hank Williams Sr., David Allen Cole, George Jones, those men did it. Hank Williams III does it. This is a message to all the haters and detractors of the Rev, the Midnight Black Mass, and anybody else that don't like what we do, or any member of my congregation. You don't like it? Take a big fuck-off pill and swallow it. Here's Not Everybody Likes Us by Hank Williams III. Keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold, and a foot in somebody's ass if they cross you. I'm the Rev. Good night. everybody.
Demons to some, angels to others.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.